I just realized that we have put together a, I'm on the board of the society. It's my honor to be on the board, but I just realized that we put together a important conversation on the, can the Constitution be saved on April Fool's Day? I guess, assuming the answer. And the only reason I realized this is I just got an email, make a plug for myself. I've been homebrewing for the last 8-9 months, and wrote a piece on how home brewing can be a good metaphor for the constitutional government, published on the Imaginative Conservative, wherever Winston is. It's a shout out to you, and so I just got an email advertisement for a non-alcoholic beer that I could brew at home, and it hit me as soon as I saw it. Okay, it's April Fool's Day. So my name is Gary Gregg. I'm the director of the McConnell Center at the University of Louisville, and I also hold the Mitch McConnell Chair in Leadership. And as I just mentioned, it has been my honor to serve my second time around now as on the board of your society. This weekend, we start to tackle a very important set of conversations about the health of our constitutional order. And, of course, we've been having these conversations for as long as this society has been around, and a lot longer than that. I think it's we all understand that the future of liberty is always precariously in the balance, and I think if we're like-minded in this room, we understand that that balance is always off-kilter one way or another. And so we begin our conversation today in typical Philadelphia society fashion, being optimistic and upbeat. And so our first panel is on the causes of the decline of the Constitution. Assuming the decline, all we have to do is talk about the causes of it. The good news is, it is not all bad news. I just got word yesterday, you may have seen this, that the president of the European Union, angry that Donald Trump supported Brexit, has now come out defending Texas secession. So, really amazing. Things are looking up. So, on the plane, on the way down, we have a few less panelists than you're probably used to in the in past Philadelphia Society meetings. And so Lenore asked me to add a few more minutes maybe on my opening remarks. So I was thinking about this on the way down and thinking about the causes of the decline of the Constitution. And I was also reading on the plane the Gospel of Matthew. And so I imagined a savior of our constitutional order coming upon our demon-possessed Constitution, and before casting out those demons, asked it its name. And then I imagined a whole list of people that it could say William Brennan, Woodrow Wilson, who knows, Barack Obama, who knows. But the answer, of course, would be legion, for we are many. I think for the causes of the decline of the Constitution are quite complicated and many. And so I started listing a few, and we all have our list. Let me offer a few. Perhaps the rise of political parties and our trust in them, something George Washington warned us about, as well as many of the other founders. Perhaps the failure of ambition to counteract ambition among those that we have put in charge of our political institutions. The invention, possibly, of deficit spending and the unshackling of our governors from the chains of taxpayers and of prudence. The rise of a progressive ideology, perhaps, or the decline of civic education and the rise of illiteracy in civics and biblical illiteracy, literary illiteracy. I was on a college campus last week giving a talk on Joseph Addison's Cato, and I didn't expect the students to know Joseph Addison for sure, or Cato. I expected them to know George Washington. I think they did, though I didn't ask them that. But I did have a chance to ask about Nathan Hale's famous comment in the Rutgers orchard before he was hung. What did he regret? Silence. Silence. And then I said, well, surely Patrick Henry calling upon his fellow Virginians. I don't know what course others may take, but as for me, hello, silence. The professor, who I really didn't know afterwards, came up embarrassed and said, what will become of our country when this is the state of civic public spiritedness? And I thought that was a telling and sad point. Perhaps the rise of luxury or the immoral uses of some of our constitutional heritages over the years by racists and bigots. Depending on what side of the room you're on, maybe it started with Lincoln, or maybe it started with the Southern secessionists. Maybe the rise of America to a world power and the growth of empire. The judicial embrace of extra-legal sociology and foreign law and penumbra. The sexual revolution, which upturned everything. Unless we sit on our high horse in this room, we are also not blameless. We have suffered from institutional partisanship from time to time, for instance. The embrace of views of institutional power and individual power that are unconstitutional but promise to give us policy victories in the moment. Whether that be creatively finding justifications for expansive presidential power, or distorting the role of our judges by urging them to slip extra constitutional moral philosophy into their rulings, or just selectively looking the other way when one of our guys was in power. So the causes of the decline of the Constitution, it seems to me, are legion. They are complicated. And that complicated factors, is thinking through that, then made me think of the complex sociology of Alexis de Tocqueville. And I would say this for the young folks in the room, but probably we're all young folks now and using social media and things. So as I think about think about Tocqueville and his understanding of our constitutional order, if our constitutional order was a Facebook, had a Facebook presence, the eternal relationship status would be, it's complicated. Our system, as Tocqueville reminds us, is based on a complex interchange of religious beliefs, cultural values, political institutions, social clubs, leisure activities, family structures, and the like. And where some of us, Americans, have seen democratic self-government as simply able to survive, you just give people the vote, Tocqueville reminds us that democratic self-government, the constitutional order, is the end product of an amalgamation of lots of forces, seen and unseen. For my wrap-up, I might give you a couple things to think about with Tocqueville and the decline of the Constitution, perhaps. This is what I call Greg's very inadequate summation of Tocqueville's formula. It seems to me it's something like this. Democracy begins by valuing equality in politics above all others, values. And that is, those who are allowed to vote all vote equally. Over time, Tocqueville points out, that equality seeps from our politics into all other aspects of life, marriage, sex, religion, the economy. Valuing equality above all other values, then, Tocqueville shows us, changes our core institutions, our habits, our morals, and our culture. These changes to our foundational institutions and practices may have, then, a profound impact on the possibility of those other things that we value, like liberty, stability, prosperity. And these changes form a kind of feedback loop to democratic self-government under the Constitution itself, maybe, he warns us, undermining its very possibility. In other words, values have consequences. And any value swollen and abstracted beyond its natural limits and unbalanced with other values will lead to profound changes that may end up undermining even that value that we have set up as a value in and of itself. If I may make it more concrete as I end, we can look at Tocqueville's understanding of something I think we are all concerned about in here, and that is the concentration of power in Washington. Toward the end of the second volume, Tocqueville says this: "I think that in the democratic centuries that are going to open up, individual independence and local liberties will always be a product of art. Centralization will be the natural government." Centralization will be the natural government. Individual independence and local liberties are the product of art. And so where does this centralizing impulse come from? Tocqueville tells us it is a drive among the people for tranquility. We want to be left alone, out of politics. We don't want to be engaged. And who better to give us tranquility than big central government? Tocqueville points out that the love of equality will become so heightened that we can't stand the idea that someone somewhere else is having fun. He didn't quite say that, but it's a better way to put it, maybe. But somewhere, somebody else is living under some different rules. We won't be able to stand that. We won't want one national uniformity of laws. He talks about ambitious political figures who know the way to get power is to promise to feed our desire for equality and then promise us more and more of it. "Put me in power, give me more power, and I will give you more equality," they say. This is how Tocqueville puts it. "Every central power that follows these natural instincts loves equality and favors it. For equality singularly facilitates the action of such a power, extends it, and assures it. You can equally say that every central government adores uniformity. Thus, the government loves what the citizens love, and it naturally hates what they hate." He talks about secondary institutions like the Philadelphia Society and says that as we democratize, we will leave our secondary institutions, our clubs, and our societies, because we'd rather be equal individuals under a central power than be unequal individuals in clubs and organizations and families and churches. He talks about industry and business and how they think centralization would be good for them, and so we'll drive it. He talks about materialism and religion and how these forces, as religion wanes, the shackles will be unshackled to allow our materialism to run wild, and who better to give us more material goods than a strong central government. He talks about war. What centralizes power more than war? So all these forces are aligned to centralize government and reduce the power of localities and groups and individuals and hence warp our constitutional order. And so I thought maybe I could start off today by adding Tocqueville as something to think about, his diagnosis at least, of the decline of our constitutional order. But you're not here to talk about me, so let's get on with the real panelists today. We have two great panelists. John O. McGinnis is a graduate of Harvard College and Harvard Law School, where he was the editor of the Harvard Law Review. He also has an MA degree from Oxford in philosophy and theology. Professor McGinnis clerked on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. He was Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice. And he is the author of Accelerating Democracy, Transforming Government Through Technology, and Originalism and the Good Constitution, both of which were published in 2013. Must have been a busy year for you. And our second panelist is John Grant, who's Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College. He has a PhD and MA from University of Dallas. He has a BA in political science and history from Eureka College, and his teaching and research interests are especially in American foreign policy and the natural law tradition. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome John McGinnis.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for that generous introduction and for the invitation. I've heard so much about the Philadelphia Society over the years, and I'm very grateful to be a part of it this weekend, particularly to talk about a subject that is so important.